Stargates, fascinating subject. And in a moment, Tom Horn joins us. Get ready for this coast-to-coast ride. Well, are you holding on? Here we go. Tom Horn, researcher, freelance writer whose Raiders News Update reports have been referred to by writers of the LA Times Syndicate, MSNBC, WorldNet Daily, White House correspondents, dozens of news magazines and press agencies all over the planet. Tom has appeared on numerous programs worldwide and once even served as a national spokesperson for Cloud 10 Pictures' movie Deceived, starring Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson. Here he is, Tom Horn. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, George. It's great to be back on Coast to Coast with you again.
Absolutely. You know, last week I had David Flynn on talking about his new work, Temple at the Center of Time, an incredible story, controversial. We'll talk about that. But are you the publisher of that?
Yes. I also own a publishing house, and that right now, that book and one other book, Israela Stein, are my two best-selling books. And David's been, he's been number one in unsolved mystery books in the world for about 2 weeks now.
Well, he deserves it. It's an incredible story, Tom. Let me just take a few minutes to talk with you about it and just get your perspective on it, even though, you know, David was the author, of course. What an incredible story to believe that the Ark of the Covenant at one point was at the Temple Mount and at the Dome, and then was moved to Mount Nebu in Jordan. What a great story. Just why won't anybody go there and look for it?
Well, because, you know, the whole political situation, I don't think the Muslims would allow anybody in there right now.
Yeah, you may be right. As friendly as we are with Jordan, I don't think they're going to let us in to find this.
Right.
You know, I think that's the same with Zahi Hawass and some of the things going on at the pyramids. I think there's some things there that they don't want us to find or know.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And but David, you know, his research into that's probably one of the most controversial parts of his book. I mean, what he really did was he found that the countries that had been involved over time with the nation of Israel and the development of Israel, and specifically, you know, with the bedroom of civilization, that in mile distances, the mileage often equated exactly to the same years in which these countries were related to the development of the nation of Israel. So it was an extraordinary find. But while he was doing all of that, he came across this same information that you're talking about, the Ark of the Covenant records, Second Maccabees, also the Jewish Talmud. You know, they tell the story about how the Ark, during the destruction of Solomon's Temple by the Babylonians in 587 BC, how the Ark was hidden by the prophet Jeremiah. Now, that's not necessarily news. I mean, there are some people who've known this for a long time. But David takes certain equations in this book in which he tries to locate exactly where this was hidden in a cave on Mount Nebo. And if you read his entire description in his book, Temple at the Center of Time, you come away thinking he may really be onto something. And in fact, what's really interesting is if you take his equations, I'm not smart enough to do this, but I'm told that this works, that if you take his equations and go to Google Earth and put those equations in, it'll show you a location on Mount Nebo, and right in the crosshairs, there is the opening to a cave entrance.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Well, somebody's got to go.
Well, I'd love to be part of that, but security's certainly going to have to be good enough before I go.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Tom, what have you been doing lately?
Well, I'm actually working on some research right now that I'm hoping to have published by this time next year, and this really will be off the curve for me in that it'll be my first major foray into secret societies. And some information that I had been thinking about for many years, and I just couldn't quite put my finger on what was going on. Some of this also even has to do with, you know, what's been going on in our country.
Sure.
Where our government has taken us and various things like that. And here some months ago, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I sat straight up in bed, and for the first time in my life, a whole lot of pieces of the puzzle came together. And it was so extraordinary that I got out of bed and started writing down notes. And you should know that since that time, I have been in almost 30 states of the Union meeting with people who can give me pieces of information, experts in their field, and I'm not qualified at this point or ready at this point to be able to talk about what I'm doing, But I will tell you that it's the most extraordinary information I've ever put together before, and I think the minute that I put it in press, I'm going to run for my life. But I think it's the most important thing I've ever done before. I think people are going to be flabbergasted by it. But other than that, just publishing people like David Flynn and others who also are great researchers and do extraordinary work.
They truly do, and they've devoted their life to this kind of investigation. And that's what's so fantastic, I think.
Right. Of course, my latest research was published in my book, Nephilim Stargates, and that's probably, I know we want to talk sometime tonight about Stargates and that whole phenomenon. And
it's the whole show, Thomas.
Yeah.
I love the Stargates. And but you, how did you get interested in that? It's not something that someone just wakes up one morning and says, you know, I'm going to investigate Stargates and portals.
No, and in fact, you know, what's so intriguing about all of that, and why I now combine my views on several things, transhumanism, emerging sciences, and the stories about these old gods, these superintelligences that came down and came from one dimension into another and then began tinkering with human and animal DNA in early Earth history. The reason that I got on that, I may have told you this before, but it's been maybe 14 to 15 years ago. I was actually doing some independent writing for some various newspapers, and I came across the term called transgenics. And at that time, I'd never heard of this term before. And anyway, it got me on the path of studying some of the newest emerging fields of science that was being funded by the military. The government was very interested in it. And in fact, that year, fully one-fourth of all federal research grants were going to transgenics. And since I didn't even know what it meant, and I was a taxpayer, but in addition to that, I was also a writer and a researcher, I thought this, you know, this was something I definitely wanted to know about.
Sure.
And it put me on this path. And this is an intriguing story. I mean, I started studying cloning, transgenics. Later on, of course, came along some of the more sophisticated terms, biotechnology, more recently synthetic biology and nanotechnology. But all of these kind of growing out of these first embryonic sciences, and transgenics was the first one. And this whole thing intrigued me, the idea that we would have an interest for some reason in crossing over the species barrier, in blending one kind of living organism with another living organism, or blending one kind of an animal with another kind of an animal. Of course, now, you know, we're doing this at the embryonic level, even with humans and animals. And what was intriguing to me at the time was I was doing some research for various newspapers that had to do with their religious columns. And what got me was that nobody was in the faith communities were talking about, you know, what would the ethics or the philosophical questions be by some of what was happening in these sciences. And so I did a little bit of research, and I wrote a couple of editorials. And one of these editorials received fairly wide publication. And out of the blue one day, and this is when email was first invented, and I'm still so low-tech that I've just figured out how to use Gmail. Tells you how bad I was. But one of the guys that got a hold of me was Cal Thomas, the syndicated columnist for the L.A. Times.
Right.
And at that time, he was the co-host of CNN's Crossfire. And he was so astonished by what I had written, and he had done a little bit of research following up to make sure I knew what I was talking about. And I thought, you know, if a guy like him, who literally lives and breathes the news every day, was kind of caught off guard by this, it made me feel a little bit better, of course. But the fact that he wasn't even aware of it, of these developments, and where some of this science could portend to take us, both good and bad, and I do think there is some good in some of this science, but it made me really want to look at it to figure out what it was. And so, man, I started just spending hours researching these new fields of science. But here's the interesting thing, George, and this is actually the amazing part of the story was how I migrated from my research in biotechnology over to the study of ancient history and the story of, you know, the God,
yeah,
the Watchers, the fallen angels, or whatever you want to call them, the aliens, these super intelligences who had come down and started mingling themselves with the human race. So here's the thing. I started out studying biotech, and I was trying to find research models that would tell me, hypothetical models that might suggest, you know, what are the pros and the cons of crossing the species barrier?
Okay.
But I wasn't finding anything, partly because the science was so new. You know, we were just riding the bicycle while we build it. And secondly, because technology or the information technological highway wasn't, you know, there like it is now. So it was very difficult for researchers to just go into stuffy libraries and dig through files and things like that. And not nearly as easy it is now. But what I kept running into, because I'm trying to find, okay, what does it mean to blend a human and an animal? So I started running into a repetitive story. And I mean, I was finding it everywhere. In every civilization that was sophisticated enough to have a form for making records of their history, all of them seem to contain some version of this story where these gods came down and they began tinkering with living species. You see the body of a horse, the head of a man, whatever it was this record. And I actually came to believe that much of what we view as mythology may have, at least in some cases, actually have been a crude record, a record for us to understand that something had occurred which involved the blending of different species. And, of course, in some of those cases, you know, it actually led to chaos. And so I thought, okay, there is a record that is here that tells us that there could have been benefits, but there were also things to beware of.
Were these genetic mistakes, Tom, or were they truly being created because they were just playing around? They wanted to see what a horse looked like with a human head, for example.
Well, it could have been both. But I came to believe there was also something a little more to it than that, in that these beings were also blending themselves with humans and animals. And it appeared to be for the reason of creating a body. Now, there's an awful lot of theorizing that if this is the case, why is it the case? Is this a super intelligence from some other galaxy somewhere that has come here because for whatever reason their species is decaying and they need some kind of a body into which they can embody themselves? You know, that theory has been out there for a while. There were these different theories. There were also all different kinds of religious theories about them wanting to leave their estate, wanting to leave their plane of existence. But what got me was, setting aside the various interpretations of it, was this record that it had occurred, that these beings had mingled their species with the human race, and for some reason it had seemed to require the need to blend different species in order to create what I, of course, now I call the pathway, the portal, the Stargate, mm-hmm. whatever, the mechanism through which they could extend themselves from wherever they're coming from into our material world.
Were they in trouble, you think?
Well, that's what
physically,
that's,
biologically?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's right. One of the theories, that there could have been something wrong with their biology, and so they were using our DNA, our genetic makeup, but my question had to do with why did they have to blend? That was one thing I didn't get, unless maybe they were picking the best parts out of
both, yeah.
But there was this record. I mean, and it's everywhere. You have the apocryphal books like Jasher, which talks about these beings coming down. And after they came in to the daughters of men, sounds very biblical, they came into the daughters of men. But after they did that, it said that men then had the knowledge and began actually teaching the mixture of animals of one species with the other. Those are actual ancient historical records. Surprisingly, however, my research into those stories of human and animal DNA harvesting at one point took what was kind of a surprising twist for me, something that I'd never really paid a whole lot of attention to. Well, I had, in a very limited way, I had paid attention to it, but not with regard to its history. And that was, I started coming across this related phenomenon in modern times called alien abduction.
Yep.
And I found that the best researchers, the most honest researchers into this field, were documenting the removal of human and animal DNA in UFO flap areas, what Valle called harvesting vital energy, something associated with three-dimensional life forms. And he and others...
John Mack, Bud Hopkins.
That's right, John Keel, hypothecated that this might be for the purposes of using this as a construct material, something that they could use to achieve incarnation. by other dimensions in our other dimensionals into our dimensions. And so the fascinating thing was, whether I was looking at ancient history, whether I was looking at comparative mythology, whether I was looking at alien abduction, there was this universal testimony that from the beginning of time, some type of unknown superintelligence had an interest in collecting and blending Earth species, not just human, but animal. I mean, you go to bed one night, Skippy the horse is out in the field, you know, and you wake up the next morning, and there he is, and there's portions of his DNA, and it has been removed with laser-like surgical precision. There's no blood. There's no footprints coming to or from him. There's no signs of a struggle. Skippy don't look like he was giving up a fight. What happened? Was he anesthetized? What happened? And the thing is, all of the intelligence agencies in the world have never come up with the blood-sucking cult, you know, that's going around the world doing this all over the world. This has happened thousands, as you know, George, thousands of times in these flap areas. And down through time, different names have been attributed to these takers of DNA, Zeus, Hades, the Watchers. You have this ancient book, the Book of Enoch, talks about the Watchers, and he talks about in the seventh chapter how these beings sinned against the animals as well as the humans. And I started having to ask myself, you know, if the only reason, for instance, that the Watchers, if the only reason they were interested in women, according to my, the technical training,
sure,
was because of their infatuation with the beauty of women, then what was this blending with animals DNA all about? And I tell people today, I say, you have to admit that even if the ancient stories of lore are nothing more than fiction or myth, the metaphorical resemblance to parts of what are also happening today, not just in alien abduction, but in modern biotechnology, which I put some of this stuff together, it's astounding. I mean, even the secular press is taking to use in terms like chimera from Greek mythology.
That's right. And we seem to be doing that now, and it was being done thousands of years ago, apparently.
That's right. We're doing something now that, at least we may be doing something now, but at least the metaphorical resemblance of what we're doing now to what we were doing then is extraordinary. And of course, you know, like I say, the chimera also was a beast that foreshadowed natural disasters. And I, you know, asked myself, why did the ancients typify, why did they describe this blended character as being something that would foreshadow natural disasters? Maybe that's a metaphor too. Maybe it's a moral, maybe it's a morality piece of historical text that says, be careful. You know, you could go into areas that could lead to problems. And some of the stuff we're seeing with like cross-blending plants and stuff right now and genetically modified crops tell us that the unnatural blending of living organisms, people, food, animals, it could be a Pandora's box. But in any case, that was the most interesting thing for me, to start out studying modern biotechnology, especially transgenics at that time, and trying to find out what were the hypothetical science models for what the good or the bad might portend in crossing over these species barriers, not to find very much, and then to find myself over here, you know, studying ancient mythology and ufology, where I was finding this record over and over and over again that, yes, animal and human DNA had been harvested, and in the mythologies, of course, it had been blended. And it led me to believe that this could, in fact, be a record of something that had occurred, super intelligent beings, cross-blending species, and at least in some of those records, for the purposes of literally incarnating themselves,
so that they could
walk among man.
Do you also think that humans may have just been abducted, picked up, lifted off this planet, and taken away, never returned again?
Well, I've watched 4400, so...
Yeah.
This is another thing. I mentioned Skippy the horse a moment ago, but there's also been areas where humans have been found laying out in the middle of a field.
Let's talk about that when we come back. Tom Horn, our special guest, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you don't subscribe yet to the After Dark newsletter, go ahead and do so by calling 1-888-727-5225. 5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. We're with Tom Horn. He's the author of Nephilim Stargates. Tom, you were talking about human beings left somewhere out in the pastures.
Well, yes. I mean, just we tend to focus on, like, there's some news stories, I think, going around right now, you know, about cattle mutilations. And some of the farmers are very concerned about what is it that's killing their cattle. And the cattle are suddenly, you know, suddenly falling over dead. And it could turn out to be something that's just environmental. But in the past, we know that, you know, cattle mutilations, horse mutilations, that sort of thing. But a lot of people don't realize that this same phenomenon has also occurred with people. And where sometimes we have very close neighbors who they haven't heard any disturbances, they didn't know anything was happening, they wake up the next morning and the police are all over the place, and here is some person that's laying out in the front yard or in their house, and they actually have parts of their anatomy, their face or certain parts of their body that seem to have been surgically removed once again. There's also been, you know, missing person stories in some of the areas of high or historical UFO manifestations, and some of those have never been solved, and some of those people have never come back. This is partly, you know, what the film series 4 to 400 and some of the others were actually based on, some of the stories of people who have disappeared, they've never come back. And the thing is, if these people in some of these cases are actually being taken, not just disappearing or they were murdered or it's a crime scene, they're actually being taken by something unknown. And you know, tens of thousands of abductees have claimed that they're moved through a slit in the fabric of reality, if you will, and then they're returned. Maybe in some of these cases, they're not returned.
Can you imagine the horror of being aboard a hostile alien craft with them scattered all over the place, doing things to you, probing you, and doing whatever they were doing? Must be awful.
I can't imagine it, but these are, you know, as you know, these are people from all walks of life and every social strata, educated people, uneducated people, wealthy people, unwealthy people, people who certainly would be considered reliable witnesses in a court of law, who in some circumstances, and most of them because of the social stigma, won't even talk about it anyway. So if there's thousands or tens of thousands that have, imagine the raw number of people who have had similar experiences but who are unwilling to talk about it because of what it might mean for their reputation. And in my studies, you know, stargates, portals, pathways, I had this fascination with first of all, some of what might be thought of as higher science types, like wormholes and whatever, but this goes more into the nuts and bolts, if you will, idea that craft are traveling here from a very far location away. And there may be something to that, by the way, but I became more convinced that we are what Dr. John Mack called an awkward joining of two species, that there might be something that's more of a parallel reality that has a science that's unknown to us, or maybe it's metaphysical, I don't know, but they have a method by which, when they desire, they can move into our reality and sometimes do things to people, and then they can move back out of that reality. And of course, you know, Mac, when he was still doing his research, he talked about how they appear to come to us from the sky in their strange spacecraft, but that it was a particularly confusing challenge. I don't know if you remember him writing about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because he said they seem to partake of properties that belong to the material world, but also the spirit world. I mean, just something that is incomprehensible. And every good researcher in this field has kind of run into that, that on the one hand, they seem to be seen by the abductees, and they feel their bodies, they move them around. Sometimes they leave behind trace evidence. They've got lesions that are inflicted on their body, scoop marks on their bodies. But on the other hand, they seem to come, Max said, like intermediaries from God or the devil. I mean, just, you know, from a non-embodied source. And yet he also used terms like stargates and wormholes. He talked about how that a lot of the abductees that he had interviewed and their cases that he had recorded had spoke to him that they had this sense that at least some of their experiences were not even occurring within the physical space-time dimensions of the universe as we comprehend it.
Well, these stargates or these portals, did they open at will? I mean, did they have the ability to open and close them whenever they wanted?
It certainly seems that they do have, and so whether it is a high technology, a type of quantum physics that, you know, in another million years of our own evolution, perhaps we would be able to understand the evolution of our science, we would be able to understand how they are doing this Star Trek type technology. On the other hand, it may be something that we haven't quite put our finger on yet, but the idea that they can open. An opening, a portal, a pathway, and the thing that I love about this research is it's not just the idea that you could be laying in bed and maybe there's something that can open and that you could be visited, but this could also even happen in the mind. There could be portals of the mind that can cause a person to become aware of other realities that are around us. That's how. In the long run, we could do a whole show on that, but in the long run, that's how I came to also start looking at transhumanism and the idea that what we're doing right now in terms of biotechnology relates back to what the gods were doing or the watchers were doing and also what happens in alien abduction phenomenon. But the idea that through blending ourselves with other species, I mean, even some of our leading transhumanist philosophers right now, like Nick Bostrom from Oxford University, who actually earned his thesis on this, and others, you know, are talking about how through blending ourselves with other species, we might also open new modes of perception. I think either with you one time on this show or another show, we talked about how there is the belief that animals might be able to see into what we think of as the spirit world.
Sure, and I'm sure they can in some form or fashion.
Well, some form or fashion. And so the idea that through blending ourselves with them, we might not only open our ability to see, our modes of perception to higher levels of the light spectrum, we might open ourselves into more godlike abilities than people can even comprehend, right?
Tom, let's talk about the initial visitations, which... You know, some are in the Bible, some stories are in Texas, the Sumerian Texas, but what happened? Why did they find Earth? How did they find Earth? What did they want initially?
Well, and is it okay if I'm talking about this, if I kind of go into some of my own radical thinking?
Yeah, absolutely.
because... You know, referring back to like some of my former and formal theological training for a moment, one of the records regarding the Watchers is also in the Book of Genesis, I believe, as well as Peter and Jude, and they talked about how these beings wanted to leave their dimension and move into a new dimension, and this is one of the records. This is how I got involved in all this, is that they chose women. You know the story, the sons of God, the B'nai Elohim. They saw the daughters of men, that they were, and here's the interesting thing in the Hebrew, that they were fit extensions. See, now I may be radical, but to me, right there, the word extension means portal, a pathway, a method by which they could leave their reality, and they could enter into ours.
And it doesn't mean that the realities were different. It doesn't mean they were in another dimension or universe. But the portals could merely have been the connection between the two.
But the connection between the two, whatever it means.
Well, yes.
At least in my mind. And at that time, I had asked myself that if I remained true to the most conservative interpretation of religious scholarship, then why would these watchers have needed to blend animals and humans? That, to me, was the first really big puzzle that I came up against.
Are we that unique, Tom? Are we that, you know, when you look at the alien grays, for example, what people have reported to be, they're fragile, they're weak-looking, they're just weak-looking. Human beings, you know, have some muscle to them.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they needed our physical stature. Who knows?
Well, and there again, that's part of, you know, all of us do this research, and every one of us from different upbringing and worldviews and point of views, but we're all looking at the same phenomenon, and we're trying to make sense out of this story, because in my mind, this is a factual story. This is something that did happen and is happening, and there's no denying it. And so why is it happening? It's just an extraordinary thing. How could this not impact the deepest parts of who we are as a person to think that we are at times, and for reasons that we can't even explain, being touched?
Absolutely. And regardless of whether it's a spiritual visitation or truly a biological visitation with an important need behind it, it's one of the greatest stories of mankind.
Well, and true. And by the way, it doesn't matter what a person's religion is. In my opinion, people are spiritual.
Yes.
People are spiritual. We are different than just a potted plant. I mean, you know, there is something deep about who we are in terms of our psychology and our spirituality. And there's no way that a person experiencing an abduction phenomenon could not at some level be deeply impacted in who they are spiritually as well as who they are physiologically.
True.
And so this is interesting to me. But I had asked myself, okay, regardless of how different people within their own worldviews may interpret the phenomenon, why would this have been necessary? What was this whole thing with the blending of humans and animals? That was just, to me, that was like the first giant big puzzle. And I looked at it from all different kinds of points of view, trying to understand why that would happen. And I finally came to believe, George, and you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but I finally came to believe that these beings had to blend species, according to this theory, in order to create a suitable body into which they could extend themselves, because every creature at that time, everything that existed, had its beginning back at the creation, or its beginning back at the Creator. In other words, all life extended back to the Creator, who had spoke it into existence. He had set it in motion, gave every living thing the power from that point forward to procreate after its own kind. But this ancient phrase, after its own kind, tells us something about what kind of a spirit would enter into a particular kind of a being, each kind after its own kind. In other words, when the sperm of a dog meets ovum of a dog, and the life of a dog is formed, at the very first spark of life, the spirit of a dog enters that zygote, and it grows up to become and act like a dog in spirit and form. The spirit of a man doesn't enter into it in the same way that a man is not born with the spirit of a horse, although I can tell you that my wife argues some men are born with the spirit of a mule.
Yeah, really?
But the point was, this would have been, if this theory is correct, then this would have been problematic for the Watchers, who, according to all these different ancient records, and it doesn't matter if you're talking about the Hebrew God or if you're talking about the Mount of Olympus, the Watchers, according to these ancient records, had participated in creation. And they didn't do the initial creating, but they participated in creation. And they could have came down on the mountain of Horeb in the days of Jared, I suppose, if you want to think of them in angelological terms, like Valet and others have, they could have came down on the mountain of Horeb, and they could have walked down into the valley of the plain, and they could have, if they were fallen angels or whatever, they could have possessed a dog, or they could have possessed a human, but the one thing they couldn't have done would have been to replace the innate spirit of whatever that creature was, dating back to its original creation. And I think that was the real problem. I know you, at times you've had exorcists on your show, and you'll talk about you'll talk with an exorcist, and an exorcist would tell us that they might be able to cast out an alien spirit out of somebody who is possessed, but the one thing they could never do is cast that person's innate spirit out of them.
That's right.
In other words, you are you incarnate until the day you're dead.
And then it leaves.
So neither could these Watchers then replace the spirit of a man or a beast in that way, but these beings who, according to ancient texts, had participated in the creation, actually knew something about the science of transgenics, the blending of DNA, one species with another. And they knew, I think, this is what they knew. They knew this would be the key to solving their problem, that to incarnate themselves and to leave their plane of existence, they simply had to blend species so that it was no longer a man or a particular kind of an animal, and therefore at the embryonic level, it was the spirit of a man wouldn't enter into it because it wasn't a man. Spirit of a beast wouldn't enter into it because it wasn't a beast. And through fashioning something like this, whatever the laws and orders were going back to the time of creation, fashioning something like this had neither been allowed by evolution or by creation. It was outside of the divine order, or it was outside of evolution. It was something entirely unique, and therefore it was a body, if you will. It was a portal. It was a pathway. It was a something that they had created into which they could download themselves or upload themselves or incarnate themselves. And that really, once I had kind of got past that mental exercise, a lot of these other ancient records, whether true or simple, or simply the meanderings of ancient writers, had made
with sense vivid imaginations.
Well, it had made sense to me, though, that what was being said had made sense to me, and of course it was also interesting to do these mental gymnastics with regard to what we're doing now, because we're, you know, right now, at least that we know. You know, in the news reports, we are blending humans and animals and also creating synthetic forms of life. And I read it, not Bostrom, but another professor from Oxford University 2 weeks ago talking about how in the future we may also blend ourselves with plants to be able to produce our own photosynthesis or whatever. And this is coming like a firestorm, and I looked at it and thought, you know, what will this mean to who we are as a person? And I think that's the gymnastic that people need to get their mind wrapped around. What will this mean to who we are as a human? Because it is going to happen, and there are a lot of great minds right now that see it as the next step in human evolution, but there are other people who are going to see it as the greatest horror ever.
Were the great Greek gods E.T. visitors, in your opinion?
Well, is there a difference between the great Greek gods and E.T.? I don't think so.
No. No. They may have been giants.
Well, I think some of them were giants.
Yeah.
And I also think that some of them were, they would have been perceived more as being ghostly, specter-like. And this is true, you know, for UFO abductee experiences where these things seem to kind of come in and out of our reality, while others actually walked on Earth in bodies. And these were the giants, Gilgamesh and others. And some of them, according at least to the mythologies and some of the historical records, some of them actually ruled countries, empires. We're great kings. We're known to be great kings.
In your research, how many different kinds of races might have come here, or was it just one?
Wow. I never thought about that before.
I think there were many. I think for some reason we were the farm of the universe, and they came in droves and different ones, the reptilians, the Greys, the Nordiques, all kinds.
Well, I can say many's. I've never tried to count.
Yeah.
Many, I should say.
I mean, maybe we are unique, Tom. Maybe this is such a unique, special-looking planet that they all come here. You know, maybe it's the tourist attraction of the universe. You never know. But we're going to come back in just a second. We'll talk about the portals now and the stargates. Do you believe, very quickly, are these portals and stargates still here on this planet?
Yeah, could be.
All right, we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm George Norrie. Tom Horn, our special guest, his website, RaidersNewsUpdate.com.